And we are live. Episode Welcome. 2. Welcome. Hi, Grant.
Hi, Justin.
How are you doing? Look, I'm great. It's fantastic. Friday afternoon. It's a beautiful day. A wonderful day. Our first ever live stream.
Without Jimbo.
Yeah, no Jim. No Jim this week, but that's okay. We don't need him. It'll be better without him.
Let's hope.
Ouch. Today's show, we will be talking about how to make money with photography or with your camera in 2023. What to do, what not to do. There's a fly in my studio. Get out of here. Especially if you're new to making money with photography, maybe new to photography itself, or if you've been doing it for a long time, but you just want to take that step into maybe part-time work or even eventually building a full-time business, that's what we're going to talk about. And I think the best way to get started is to ask Grant, do you remember the first time you got paid to take photos?
It was probably real estate, and I think it would have been for a rental property. So it would have been about $100.
Okay. So someone that you knew, just that worked for a real estate agent?
Yep. So my partner worked at a local real estate, and they were just doing their photos like on their phone. Oh, and they wanted something, a little bit better than their iPhones or whatever, their iPads, whatever they're using.
Yeah.
So done that for probably 2 years.
Oh, so you got one job and then they wanted to keep doing it. I guess $100 was pretty reasonable. So
yep. And I was just more reliable than the bigger companies. Like I could do it that day where they would be like, oh, I'll be there in a week.
Okay.
And because I was working part-time, working full-time then, but part-time photography. Mm-hmm. I'd just be like, yep, give me the number. I'll be there tonight.
Okay. Whereas if they were dealing with sort of a professional real estate photography business, they would schedule it in a week later or something like that.
Yeah, they would probably schedule in a full day. So they would have like 4 or 5 houses they would do in a row.
Okay.
So then I'll just do one.
Yeah, interesting. Did you like it?
I feel like the rental side was okay, but most of the time you go in there, it's renters, their houses are dirty. You feel weird touching people's stuff.
Yeah.
Like you go into a bathroom. Like you go into a bathroom and it's all dirty and you're like, oh, what do I do? And you take a photo and the real estate agent would be like, why didn't you move their stuff? And I'm like, I'm not going to touch their toothbrush and their dirty towels and the rest of it.
So you didn't feel comfortable working in the spaces? Like it is just sort of...
Nah. The empty houses were good because you could just get in, click, 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 done. Come home and edit.
Yep. But yeah, going into rentals and stuff. Yelena Jennings wants to know where Jim is. Jim is on holidays. I think he's going to Queensland. But
yes,
he should know where. I have no idea. I didn't ask.
Oh.
Too busy trying to get my new studio camera set up. I'm quite happy with it. It looks good.
It's very crisp. What are you using?
This is the R5.
Expensive webcam.
It's an expensive webcam. I ordered the Elgato, something like that, Camlink 4K, and plugged it in, and it worked first time. Perfecto. Much better than the iPhone that I used last week.
Well, I'm on the iPhone. That's why I'm a little bit less crisp than you.
Less crispy, yeah. Plus, I've got this nice, I've got a new Aperture Light Dome Mini softbox with a grid on it, and I think it's really good. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than last week.
Yeah, upgrades. So real estate was the first thing that you made money from. What else have you tried?
Stock photography was probably the next one.
So that was after real estate, you sort of thought?
Probably about the same time.
Okay. Did you specifically shoot for stock photography, or did you take stuff that you'd already sort of shop that was in your portfolio and just upload it.
Yeah. So stupidly, I like would have been overseas to Europe, and I was just working with a guy one day, and he's like, "Oh, have you tried stock photography?" And I was like, "No, what's that?" And I looked into it, and I just literally went on to, I think it was Shutterstock at the time, and just uploaded every photo I had.
Everything?
Nearly everything I had.
Like, so how many would that be roughly? Like, are we talking about 100?
There's only probably 40, 50, like, of the ones I thought were good at the time.
Yeah.
Looking back, they probably aren't. And they're not really stock photography type of photos. They're more just the landscapes and all that I was doing. But, so I went from Shutterstock, then I put them onto Getty.
Okay.
And I reckon total for 8 years would be $150.
Wow. Totally done over 8 years.
Yeah. And I think I've lost a lot more due to people stealing my photos. Well, not even stealing. They have a license, and then they pay 5 to 10 cents for a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in the Bendigo Advertiser domain properties, use my photo of the fountain.
Oh, wow.
I opened up and I was like, I swear that's my photo. And then, yep, went back exactly the same. Like, it was my photo, and yep, I got paid 10 cents.
Wow. And they, I wonder if they licensed it for print, like, because there's different license levels and stuff, yeah, depending on what they did. I wonder if they did the right one or whether they just hoped that no one would notice. But it's too hard to try and police stuff like that anyway. It's like, it's all over the internet. Yeah.
And like recently I've just deactivated every stock website I was a part of due to just finding my stuff on Etsy. People were downloading them from Canva because Canva must have a subscription to Getty.
They do. They have, if you have a pro Canva subscription, you have access to a heap of stock photos that I didn't realize they came from Getty, but they're coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
So I've been chasing people on Etsy, being like, this is my photo, please get rid of it.
Yeah.
And they've made, 2,000 sales at $8 for a digital download.
They're reselling your image on Etsy. Yep.
As a digital download.
That's against all the terms and conditions with all the stock photo sites. So they're obviously, they just don't care.
No, well, that's why they take it down straight away, because they don't want to get a bad, like a blacklist. But there's even companies in Queensland got one of my Highland Cow photos.
I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah.
Print
on demand.
But it was, wasn't there one in a cafe as well? Like not print on demand. It was actually a framed print ready to sell.
Yeah. So like that was their cafe.
Ah, right.
So they would print all their stuff and put it in that cafe. So they obviously hired the space to promote their stuff as well.
And so they had basically licensed your photo legally from a stock photo site, but then were selling it as if it was some artist's photo hanging in a cafe. For how much did they have on that?
I think it was about $800, $900.
Yeah. So they were charging fine art print prices on something that they just licensed off a stock photo site.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Very misrepresentative. So,
and the way I found out was a lady from the Sunshine Coast messaging me on Instagram being like, do you have any more of these photos available? And I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, where did you see that? And she's like, this is your photo, isn't it? And they actually had my name on there, Grant Fleming Photography. That's how she found it.
Oh, no.
And that's how I got onto it.
They were essentially pretending that they were selling you on behalf of you, but they had paid you some cents and they were going to keep the full $800, obviously minus whatever they'd spent to print it out and frame it. That's so dodgy.
Yeah, so that's dodgy. Why as soon as that happened, got rid of everything. I'm waiting. I think I got $100 from Getty on the way somewhere, but I haven't seen a cent still.
Yeah, so obviously stock photography, people make money from it. It definitely can work, but I think the people that make money from it, either they get lucky with a photo, they're in the right place, right time, or they really work it. They pay models, they do specific shoots where they do commercial themes. Say they do fake real estate office photos, and they'll just they'll do, you know, 100 photos in a day with some models and stuff like that, and then they'll all be available forever. And then they do the same thing with all sorts of stuff, and then they can probably, I'm sure they can make money out of it, but it's a tough business to make.
It comes down to licensing, I think, in the end.
Yeah.
Like what you license it as.
Exactly. Shots by Jeremy says that's so bad. He is quite unhappy for you and your story.
Yes, it was bad. But I was talking to the barber when I was getting my hair cut, and his dad's a stock photographer.
Okay.
Photographer. Photographer, yeah.
Yes.
And he was just putting like the keywords or hashtags or whatever they use, and just saying Ukraine, Russia, war, even though it was just like, you'd go down to the CFA where they blow stuff up and take a photo of that.
Oh,
and then
no.
He was tagging it as that, and people were buying it
to license it for news articles and stuff. But it was nothing. Yeah. It was, that's interesting. That sounds very,
a very good
shady
tip. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, what you're saying essentially is the people that are doing it are working the system pretty hard to try and get money from it. And it's got to be something you'd have to work and want to be interested in, which I've never been. I've never really tried it, but it's interesting to hear your story that you gave it a go and it was mostly frustrating, and $150 over 8 years works out to, you know, a couple of coffees a year maybe. In money. So you wouldn't, in general, for someone looking to sort of make part-time income in 2023 with their camera, you wouldn't say go out and take a heap of photos and put them on stock photography. That's not something you're going to be doing this year. So
no, but it depends what you like taking photos of. If you like taking photos of flowers, maybe, because
even then, like how many flower photos are already on stock photography sites? Like,
but how many people are going to buy a photo of a flower?
So
you're better off having, like, that's what I was getting so conflicted by. It's like, I'm better off making, you know, the 50 cents than making nothing at all. Yeah. But over that time, I'm just like, nah. Like,
one thing we talked about just before the show, actually, but I know there's photographers doing it that have done well, which is doing niche stock photography at higher prices, where say you work your hometown really hard and just take a photo of everything you can think of that might be interesting, like that photo you had of the fountain that the domain licensed for 20 cents. Instead of that, you create a website specifically for your hometown, for Bendigo, and you put all the photos on there as digital downloads, but you charge $50 or $100 per download or something like that, but make them very specific images to Bendigo and try and make them the best ones that are around, and even offer a lot of businesses like an exclusive license, because if they want to put it on their website, they don't want to see it on any other competing business's website. So, you know, you could offer an exclusive license for a great drone photo of a town for $200 or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, in one sale, you've made more than you made on stock photography for 8 years. It's something I've been thinking about a lot. It's not something I want to do, but I think it would be a good way. If you were new to photography and didn't really want to go hustling for clients, it's a good way to give you a reason to get out and shoot, and you would make sales for sure.
And you'd probably make clients too, maybe.
Exactly, because then they deal directly with you to get the image, and then you can say to them, hey, if you ever want some more content, let me know. I can do a shoot specifically for you and what you need. You would definitely pick up clients by doing that. I think it would be a good tactic.
Yeah.
What are you going to be doing in 2023 to try and make some money? Are you trying to make money with photography in 2023?
Yeah, because I want a new camera.
So if you had the camera you wanted, would you be trying to make money with photography? Or
yeah
you would still want to
making money or just shooting, and then I don't know. If you got just shooting stuff that you like and you're getting paid for it, I reckon it's different to getting paid. Like, if you're doing weddings, you're like, you're working. But if then, like, if you're out, say, with your buddies snowboarding and then you get some cool photos and they, you know, flick you a couple of bucks, I reckon that'll be more benefit. Like, it'd be better for me. I'd enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, there's definitely, well, it's, I've done both a lot over the last 10 years. And yeah, you know, there's been plenty of times I've worked for free to do projects that I'm really interested in. Snowboarding was one of them. I did a lot of free work before I got paid doing that. And even when I did get paid, it wasn't much, but I was still stoked to do it. But yeah, at that point, I was still making money from shooting weddings and things. So I'd had to balance out with that to make sure that I still had enough money to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to survive purely off snowboard photography, that's for sure. But yeah, it's, if you need a new camera, different story altogether.
That's it. Yeah. So like, I'll do a few weddings here and there, see who wants me, who doesn't. Like, I've just updated my website, mainly focusing on smaller weddings, as I don't have as much time as everyone else.
Who's everyone just else?
Like a full-time photographer's, like,
okay, let's say, so you're Jim. Yeah. Jim, for example.
Yeah.
So you're worried about competing with people that do it full time. So you want to try and carve out something that's a bit of a different offering at a lower price point, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for the people that don't need all day coverage and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Just, you know, they just want the ceremony, little couple of family photos afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And weddings are obviously, they're a tough one because you've got to be very professional, even if it's a side hustle, because you can't show up late. You can't have crappy camera gear. You can't have no backups, all that sort of stuff. But it's good. On the other hand, if you've got a Monday to Friday 9-to-5 job, you know, most weddings are on the weekends. It works perfectly. Like you can usually do both. Yeah,
it's a good side hustle.
Yeah. A great side hustle. I before I went full time, I had booked in 23 weddings for the upcoming season and had shot a few while I was still working. So yeah, it's probably the only business, photography business model I could think of at the time that I was able to kind of build while I was still working full time and then have enough guaranteed work to know that I could pay my bills, you know, cause weddings book so far in advance. That's the other thing. So, you know, I, when I quit my job, I had 23 booked already. So I was like, okay, even if a couple of these don't go ahead, I've still got quite a lot of work guaranteed. And then I could start hustling from there to try and grow the business.
Yeah. And then, obviously if you got onto a few like recurring commercial jobs as well, at least that way you have like, you know, income coming in.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. And that's obviously what worked for you for a while with real estate. You're not going to try and get into that again to fund your new camera?
Nah, I don't think so.
Why not?
Definitely.
That going into people's bathrooms and moving stuff around? Is that the major thing?
PTSD, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
It just doesn't interest me anymore.
Did you ever see anything real weird in there? Anything like super, super freaky?
Nah, there was nothing real bad. Otherwise, I think I'll remember it. Just, you know, people would be like, don't go into this room because it's messy. And then you look in there and you're like, oh, wow. Like, how do people live like that? But
you shut my house, I see.
Or like, oh, we've just cleaned up today. And you look around and you're like, what part of this did you clean?
Yeah,
and you're like stepping over stuff. And it's just I literally be like, oh, I took a couple of photos, walk out, call the real estate, and be like, I can't take photos of this. Get me back when they're out.
Yeah, yeah. So mainly weddings. What about working with businesses? Like, what about commercial stuff? So not real estate, but trying to, like you say, find some businesses that want ongoing work. Is that something you've ever done or worry about, like, or have thought about?
I've been thinking about it. So my partner, Eilish, she's been telling me for quite a while now, just, you know, like, reach out, start contacting companies.
Yeah.
You know, be like, I can do this one for free. And then later on, obviously, if they like it, they'll be like, all right, we need some more work done. But I don't know, being part-time, haven't really been full-time. It's like, oh, are my photos good enough? I've just got that doubt in my head.
Good enough for what, though? To shoot commercial stuff?
Yeah.
If, I mean, in my opinion, like, weddings are a little bit more stressful. Because a commercial shoot, you can always just say, you can just redo it or say sorry and you know, not charge them or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't redo a wedding day. Obviously, if there's a commercial shoot that's like a, you know, you've only got one chance at some huge thing, maybe that's different. But yeah, in general, they're a lot less stressful for me than shooting a wedding. And like you say, you can start. I've always thought it would be interesting to go to businesses and offer them a free photo shoot, where you give them, you literally shoot for free. You might even say, I'll give you a couple of free photos. You know, from there you can purchase photos from your shoot for something cheap, like $25 each, or the whole shoot for 200, and just start cheap and then slowly sort of ratchet it up from there. It's one of those things a lot of people talk about. You know, don't undersell your photography and don't undercut people and don't charge too little, but to get your foot in the door, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving businesses basically an offer that they can't refuse, so that you can build your portfolio and show them some value. It's just charging a lot because people say that, you know, oh, don't undercut yourself. Like, you should charge what you're worth. But that doesn't mean people will pay it.
No. Yeah. And people are just like, why would we pay you when we can take a photo on our phone?
Exactly.
But they just don't understand. But I've been reaching out to companies, though.
Who have you been reaching out to?
Some snowboarding companies in Japan.
Because you're going there next week?
Yep, fly out Tuesday. But I've messaged them, being like, look, I'm happy to come on a tour. I'll pay my own way. Mm-hmm. I'll take some photos for my portfolio. I can use them. You can use them. It's a win-win.
Yep.
And I've had one response being like, we do tours on these days, but no like real genuine response. And the other company didn't write back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bar in town that I've know the owner of, and you might know the owner of this one too.
Oh, yes.
Rooftop bar in town.
I'm aware of the one, yes.
Yeah. I've actually shot there before.
Okay.
I was part of the opening promotion.
I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I was drinking there that night.
Yeah. So I've messaged him again and hopefully get up there sometime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a big one. Like, food, obviously, it's hard to shoot. If you specialize in it, you can get good at it. And it used to be very sought after. It's probably a little bit more commoditized now because everyone's got a menu online and all that sort of stuff. So they've all had to have photography done at some point. Yep. But it's still, you know, there's a lot of restaurants in Bendigo alone, let alone the ability to travel. You could definitely make a name for yourself doing it, but there's a lot more to it than I like doing natural stuff, but the setup food shots that people do, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
They're very good. The people that do that well.
I was watching a YouTube episode the other day and two photographers went out, I think down Melbourne, and they just went into every cafe and it's like, hey, I'm a photographer. Do you need any photography done for your website, Instagram? And I think they went into about 10 cafes before they got one person to be like, yeah, I need photos.
And then they
made $150.
Yeah.
And then
start though. I mean,
recurring work after that, because I think the guy wanted photos of his car the next day. And it's just
hustling, just going to ask people. I mean, that's hard if you're doing it as a side hustle, but I mean, that's how they got, you know, you could wait weeks to try and get someone to inquire with you on your website or something, and they just went out and found
it. Yeah.
Speaking of websites, that was actually another thing I'd noted down here, that for someone that has the ability to make a nice, plain, but nice Squarespace website or something like that, if you're a photographer that has those skills, which you should have those skills, because if you want to make money from photography, you probably should have your own website. Actually, you definitely should have your own website.
Yep.
Don't rely on social media to be your home base for your business online. And if you can make a nice website for someone, the ability to walk into a business and say, hey, I can take the photos and make your website. Like, you don't have to do anything, because getting the photos together and then getting a website made, business owners often don't have time to think about it, and they don't want to think about it. Like, if you wanted to offer a business something they couldn't refuse, you could take photos and make the website where they've had to pay nothing. And then once it's done, show it to them and say, if you would like this, it's $750. It's ready to go.
Yep.
Photography and website done. Like, something, I'm just talking like 2 pages, you know, like just a basic business website. Doesn't have to be something super functional.
About us, menu. That's what you
exactly.
mean.
Whatever it is, depending on the type of business, just a very basic, you know, it could be a mechanic. It's just some photos of the workshop. It's some photos of the front, list the services, that, you know, very, very simple Squarespace template or something like that. And hey, it's ready to go.
Yeah.
$1,000 photography and website all done. And worst case, they say no. And you, I don't know, use the template for someone else.
Yeah, that's it. Just have a standard standard setup for it.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next business, you find a different style and make it suit them. But most smaller businesses, they don't need the world's fanciest website. They just need something that's got up-to-date photography, you know, their location, decent SEO sort of basic setup, so that they're going to get found on Google, which is usually the thing that people get wrong.
Mm.
I don't know. I see that as a big opportunity where you could merge a couple of skill sets together and just get it done for people without them having to put too much work into it.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of that, do you have a website?
I have a lot of websites, but I currently don't have one for my photography. but I have. So, yes, Lucky Straps, which is my main business. We make camera straps for photographers. You might have heard of it.
I might have.
You might have. LuckyStraps.com. That's our online store for that, which I made. But we've also got the website justinandjim.com.au, which is our wedding photography website, which I don't shoot many weddings anymore. Jim shoots pretty much all of them. But I helped build that website as well. And I used to have my own personal website, and I kind of let it lapse, but that's on the list for things to do this year, is to bring that back and focus on the work that I've been doing with mountain bike photography, snowboard stuff. So more sports and the industrial work that I do, the industrial commercial stuff, for rescue training, going into mines and working at heights and that sort of stuff. I really don't have somewhere to feature all of that, and I don't update my Instagram enough. So I need my own website again.
Yeah. Mm. At least, you can, you know, just have a portfolio on your website.
Mm.
And if you're not big on Instagram, which I don't think, I don't know. I think Instagram is a bit of a waste of time, really. It's more reels now. Like, you don't get discovered now unless you're doing reels.
Although, did you see...
Unless it's carousels.
Did you see the news that everyone's talking about with Instagram? Let me see if I can find it, the article that I saw about Instagram's announcement for them maybe making photography a bit more prominent again. See if I can find it. Might have been on Petapixel. Do you ever go on Petapixel?
No.
Oh, I think it's my go-to news source generally for photography and videography stuff. Let me see.
Well, I know a lot of people go into Vero. like a lot of photographers were talking about Vero.
Yeah.
It's basically Instagram again, but for more for photographers.
Yeah, and maybe that's why Instagram's starting to stress out a little bit. Trying to see if I can find this. I'm sure, unless someone's had to have it taken down. Sure, it was only this morning. But basically, basically they were saying that they're looking to no longer have the Reels button as the most popular, like the main button in Instagram.
Yeah.
Like it's, they're going to maybe change that to be slightly less prominent. Yeah, this is the one I was looking for. That they over-focused on video last year, obviously trying to compete with TikTok. And that, you know, they have a number of photographers who have been upset and they're still leaning into video, but photographies will always be part of Instagram. So it sounds like maybe they won't push Reels quite as hard against photos and maybe bring photo, like they might go back to where it's a bit more balanced. So I'm excited to see if that becomes, I don't know, comes back to normal a little bit. I mean, I posted a photo the other day and actually got a little bit of traction, which was weird.
Yeah. Well, I just know like all the photographers now, they're not posting photos. They're posting videos of them taking photos.
Exactly. Because it was getting pushed harder.
Yeah. And it'll be like, just, they're all got mirrorless straight in the viewfinder, bring it out. You see it. It's just the same thing, but it's just like just not posting their photos anymore. So it's like, are they actually enjoying taking the photos or are they just
making content, making content, behind the scenes content? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's a whole nother way to make money with a camera is, kind of being trying to become more of an influencer and get paid to promote things and stuff like that. But it's a tough road these days and a long road to build enough of an audience that you could make money from being an influencer. Is that something you've ever thought about? Like since you lean towards landscape, photography, is that an option?
I don't think I could be an influencer.
Why?
I don't know. I just don't think I influence enough people. I'm not that interesting.
Well,
I couldn't go out there and be like, oh, you know, walk around in a skimpy bikini.
Hey, that would get the views.
I feel like it would be a lot of hard work.
Definitely. Yeah. I think it takes people a long time. I follow a photographer, a videographer called Jason Morris. He's bought some straps off us in the past and made some videos about us. And I follow him now. He's a great videographer, but he's put a lot of work into Reels. I don't know if he's on TikTok, but he definitely pushes Reels and Shorts really hard. And I don't know how long it takes him to make all that stuff, but man, I don't know how he gets any of his actual commercial work done because he puts out so much content. But it's worked. Like his following's grown by a huge amount, which is awesome. It's great to see. I can imagine he's working hard to get that happening.
Really, if you could definitely like dedicate the time to it, if you just made like 30 reels and just scheduled them day after day, I feel like you would pick up a lot of traction, but then you've got to keep it going.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you've got to be interesting too. Like you say, you got to put out content that people find exciting. Otherwise, it's not going to get pushed by the magical Instagram algorithms and people won't see it. So, yeah, it's not something I've ever really leaned into, but it would be interesting to try it. But I think I'm more excited about trying it with longer form YouTube stuff, like actual deeper content than Reels. But that's the plan. That's part of the plan with this podcast.
Yeah. Speaking of that, how did the GoPro microphone go?
Yeah, good. I tried it on some So we're talking about the media mod. Where is that media mod gone? For, yeah, this thing. For the Hero 11 that I got. It's not in focus, but you know what it is. And I tested it out mountain biking, actually, on a chesty mount, and put the camera, the microphone to the back. And it's weird. It, like, it's good because it doesn't pick up any wind. So you hear a lot more noise of the bike, but you didn't hear the wheels on the dirt. It was quite strange. But you heard all the like rattling and stuff from the bike frame itself, and a lot of breathing from the rider, which was funny.
Is that because it was up higher then?
It was just, I think, because the microphone was pointing back towards the rider's chest. A lot of the sounds must have been getting muffled. The sounds that you would normally hear really clear on the GoPro, like wind and the tires on the dirt. So you were sort of hearing different things. But I didn't actually try the front. I think the front probably would have been good. I just wanted to try the back because I thought it would get less wind noise.
Yeah.
But I definitely recommend keeping an eye on which mic you've got selected if you're going to be using it in Japan to vlog and stuff. Like if you're pointing it back at yourself, you want it on the front mic. But if you're going to be pointing it out in front of you, so like walking through the street, talking to it or something, but you're not on camera, then you would want it on the back mic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. Very cool. Very annoying to change the battery though.
Flat.
You got to take it off the mount, slide it out of the case just to change the battery. It's quite annoying.
But have you seen the other attachments they've got? The tripod attachment?
Yeah, that has the
like the vlogger sort of setup. Yeah.
There's like a handle and
yeah,
I think that handle it as well.
Yeah, it's like a power source.
I bought I don't know where I've put it. I bought the remote as well, which will actually be handy for, because I was trying to film some content for reviewing this 16mm lens. So I was just sitting the GoPro off to the side and then hitting record when the rider was about to come through. That 16mm lens is so much wider than 16mm. It's crazy.
So you got some good stuff with it then?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to do some more testing, but yeah.
Yeah.
Super fun. Definitely a interesting lens.
You'd be able to get nice and close to them then, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Get real close. Get real wide. The only problem is the camera automatically puts like a rectilinear lens profile to correct the lens from being a bit fisheye to make it flat, basically. So it stretches the corners out, and that's what sort of crops it into 16mm when it actually seems like it's more like 14 or even wider. It's wider than 14, but it's got some crazy vignetting right at the edges. But in the viewfinder, you can only see it at 16, so you can't see exactly the extra you're getting later on. And then you bring it into Lightroom and sort of dial the profile corrections down, and the image just gets bigger. I should see if I can pull it up. Let's see if this works. See if I can share my screen.
So going back to what we're talking about before, getting Justin Castles. Was it justincastles.com?
It was justincastles.com. Yeah, that was my first website, my first photography website.
So with you getting that up and putting some more work on it, are you trying to get more work within those fields? Do you need a portfolio to be able to get those jobs?
I don't need one to get those jobs. I get quite a bit of work because I've got a strong relationship with the main place that I do mountain bike photography and videography, which is Flow Mountain Bike. But I did realize that if I wanted to push into different areas, maybe work for some bike manufacturers and things like that, obviously Flow could help me connect with them and open the door. But if they Googled me, they basically won't see any content. I haven't posted anything under my name that I've done for the last 2 years for that kind of work. So I really need to pull it together in one place in case there is that point where someone, you know, is looking for a photographer and I get recommended and then they Google me and they see nothing.
Yeah.
So I definitely need to do it, but I'm not necessarily looking for more work. If I was looking for anything, it would be looking for new challenges in that style of work and building new relationships. But I'm not necessarily trying to increase the volume of the work.
Because I know, as I was saying before, reaching out to those companies in Japan, I put in my website and my Instagram, and I think they've looked at it because the analytics behind Squarespace tell you where people have viewed your website from. And both days I've messaged them, people from Tokyo have looked. So I'm like, coincident lunch? But there's not much on my, I said in the email, like I'm starting a portfolio in this sort of area. But on my website, I've got weddings and some pictures of a cow. And they've probably looked at him and been like, why would we want him to come take a photo?
Which is what I was saying in terms of, I think if you want to go on one of these snowboard tours anyway, and it's something that you'd like to do while you're traveling, and you're happy to spend the money to do it, whether they want photography or not, just pick the tour that you think will be the most fun for you. But take your cameras and go there with a plan to get some really good photos for your portfolio, and then give them to them for free. And then just maybe get to build a relationship with them. But worst case, you come away with some images you want from your portfolio for your portfolio, and you also get to have a fun experience that you were going to do anyway, hopefully. So, because it is really hard if someone. If you tell them that you can do, you know, snowboard photography on their tour and there's nothing on your website that even relates to that, it's very hard for them to make that leap.
They're like, what's he know about it? There was a clothing brand as well over there and they do some cool clothes, and I was nearly going to message them. Then I looked at their story. They had like the photographer for Red Bull Japan taking photos for them. And I was just like, nope.
You're almost better off to contact the guy that shoots for Red Bull Japan and say, hey, if you need any behind the scenes shots of you working, let me know. I'll follow you around for a day and create some content for reels and stuff like that, just you know, because it's tough. So to get into doing snowboard work, I definitely, like, the first stuff I shot for free. I was on a tour anyway, that I paid to go on, and I wanted to do that for fun. It actually had no strategy to try and, you know, become a snowboard photographer or anything like that. I was just super into it. I gave photos to all the people that were on the tour. I let the tour company use them all for free, whatever you want. And then the relationship slowly evolved in the right direction. By me giving them value, you know, like they need to see value before they'll then take a chance. It took them a while, and they took a chance on me by giving me a free trip. So I still had to work for free, but the trip was paid for. And I took that responsibility pretty seriously and worked my ass off as if I was getting paid my full day rate. And then that led to more trips and more trips. So then COVID ruined it all.
I've got a buddy who I've messaged ever since my partner's told me to, you know, branch out and start messaging more people. Mm-hmm. I've probably been more active in the last 2 weeks than I've ever been before. I've got a buddy who he snowboards up in Mount Buller for a bit.
Okay.
And like all of his mates are, you know, like all the main homies up there. And I just said, mate, whenever you're up there, let me know. I'll come up and take photos. You can use them for whatever. I just want to build up a strong portfolio.
Yeah, perfect.
But it's more park, though. Like, I'm more, you know, because what's behind you? Like someone shredding on a mountain.
Yeah, that's from a heli trip in New Zealand. And you can't really see it, but it's...
you get the general...
You get the general idea. It was that's amazing the stuff landscape that
I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's you've got to be in the, to get in the locations to get the shots. The shots aren't actually that hard to take, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just being there when it's happening. That's yeah, the hard part. So yeah, if you can crack that, but going up to Buller, at least you'll be able to fill your website up with the right kind of stuff. And yeah, that is where it does get tricky, where if you want to make some money shooting weddings, but you also want to, you know, try and crack into sport, you know, you almost need two websites, or maybe, you know, use the website for booking weddings and making some money on that side of it, but then you have a separate Instagram profile or something like that,
yeah,
that you run, you know, something that's more focused on the area of work that you're trying to grow long term.
Yep.
Yeah, like your main passion and your main focus.
Yeah,
it is tricky to try and do it all under one brand.
Yeah, well, I don't promote any of my wedding stuff on my Instagram.
Yeah,
where I feel like a lot of people will find people on Instagram.
Yeah, they do, for sure. Yeah. And they want to see proof that you're the safe choice. So even if they found you on the website, they'll probably still want to look at an Instagram feed and see lots of work on there and stuff like that. You know, that's why Jim books so many weddings, because if someone looks at our website and our Instagram and stuff, they just see just hundreds of weddings of couples. Yep. And it's like, oh, okay, they're going to show up and they're going to do a good job. It's safe. Yep. Yeah. So the more, and I mean, hey, we started, booked my first wedding was actually an ex-girlfriend that, and I shot her wedding, for $500, I think it was.
Yeah.
And at that point I had just taken some photos at my sister's wedding. I wasn't the main photographer there, but I just took some photos while I was there with the main photographer's permission. And then I booked with the photos from my sister's wedding and from my ex-girlfriend's wedding, I booked my first actual wedding package.
Yeah, right.
Which was like a $3,000 wedding package, because it included two photographers. And that's when that's when I booked Jim. That's when I met Jim, basically, or started our professional relationship, because I needed a second photographer, because I created a low package, a medium package, and then a high package, and pricing, you know, kind of structure. Everyone's like, oh, everyone will book the medium package, so you need to have a low one and a high one. And the high one, to make it higher, I made it two photographers all day and made it $3,000. And so people would maybe book the one that was like $2,200 or something for the middle one.
Yeah.
But the first main client that I got booked the top one. So then I had to go out and find the second photographer. And that was Jim. And that's how Justin and Jim was born.
Yeah, right.
Mm.
How did that first wedding go then?
It was stressful, but pretty good. Pretty good considering. They were fun, really cruisy couple. It was in Echuca. It was a great wedding. But yeah, it was stressful, because you just don't know what they're expecting. And honestly, I still have that trouble now, even though I know I can do a great job in any situation, but it's wondering what expectation they have, and whether you're going to fit that or not. That's what stresses me out, because they might be imagining something completely different.
Yeah,
yeah.
At least now, like, obviously you've got a pretty big website with a lot of photos. They should know what they're getting.
That's what I was saying, is that's what makes us the safe choice, is, you know, they can look on there for hours and just see so many photos from so many different situations and different couples and all that sort of stuff. And it makes it very, very clear what we do. So it would be odd for someone to book us and then go, oh, this isn't what I wanted, because we do the same thing at every wedding, you know?
Yeah.
What else can make money with a camera in 2023, I know what I wouldn't be doing, and that's trying to sell NFTs. I don't think I don't think I'd be worrying about that too much in 2023. Certainly not saying they're dead or anything. And if you know all about it, then go for it. But if you're just thinking of ways to try and make money with a camera, NFTs would not be one I would put at the top of the list.
I've got three made.
Three NFTs.
Yeah, none sold.
Ah, none sold.
No.
Yep. Yeah. I didn't know you'd made any. That's interesting. Yeah. Do you have any story? How did it go? What did you do?
I was just following a photographer on Instagram, and he's a pretty big landscape photographer, and he was getting into the NFTs. And I sort of just, he was posting and posting, and I just got onto Twitter, and he was posting on there, because that's where I think most of them start posting about their NFTs.
Yeah.
And I messaged him, and I'm like, mate, I need a, you need a code to be able to log on from another creator. So I messaged him. I'm like, mate, I'm looking to, you know, I think it could have been Founder, maybe, could be the website. I no longer have access to it, but so I got onto that, and I didn't realize that you actually had to pay money to mine the NFT. I have no idea how it works. So like, you pay for it to be created, minted, and then everything, I think, yeah, minted,
it, yeah,
and then everything you do after that, you've got to pay again. So like, I think mine's worth 0.1 Ethereum.
Okay.
And then if you want to change it to 0.05 Ethereum, you've got to like pretty much re-mint it.
Oh, wow.
So then you've got to pay again. So you're really spending like $50 per mint, and then you've got to try and sell it.
Yeah.
And then people will buy NFTs of like weird stuff, and you're like, what? Like, I was doing it. I didn't understand, and I wouldn't do it again.
There's a lot of hype around it. I didn't get too deep in it, but I did meet a lot of people that were deep into that world and had projects, or, you know, bought and sold, yeah, fairly expensive NFTs. And yeah, I still don't quite understand it. I think the technology is super interesting, and something will come of it. But as of right now, 2023, it's probably not something that's worth pursuing when, you know, you could just go and find a real client in your hometown and create some value for them, and they'll pay you.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's very cool that you tried it.
Yeah. The photos I used weren't NFT worthy, I don't think.
Yeah. But what is, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
As you can NFT anything. So if you're not going to do NFTs or stock photography in 2023, another thing that I saw, I did a little bit of research for this podcast, and some of the lists of how to make money with a camera that come up are pretty interesting. There's a lot of suggestions on creating an online course or selling presets.
Yep.
Which was super interesting, because I was like, the only times that would be applicable for someone who's Googling how to make money with their camera is if they've somehow mastered an amazing style of photography, but they just have never pushed into the business world. But, you know, they're the best nightscape photographer in the world, or not the best, but, you know, they create amazing work, and they could make a course around it. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But for the average, you know, people like you and me, if you're at the point where you're just trying to make, you know, hundreds, thousands, you'd have to have a very big following, and you'd have to have a unique skill or a very good ability to communicate if you're going to do an online course or something like that. Yeah. But say for presets, you either need a giant following, or you need presets that are really specific to, you know, some sort of style of photography, or you need to be like Kirk Maston from Maston Labs and make the best film presets for Lightroom that are available. That's different, but that's a whole business. Like, he's spent years building a business that's able to do that. It's not just like, hey, I'm a landscape photographer and I'm going to sell my presets. So yeah, it was pretty fun reading through some of those lists of how to make money. You're like, launch an online course.
Yeah. I know Frono Foco.
Frono's photo .com.
Yeah, he pumps his presets.
His presets. But hey, look, more power to him.
Following.
I would actually like to buy one of his packs and do a review. I'm going to buy the new Maston Labs pack that come out and do a review on it. I've never reviewed presets before. Do you have you ever bought presets?
Yep. The Peter McKinnon V3 and V4.
Oh yeah. How do you use them?
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So most of my autumn photos on my Instagram would have been the V3 version of Peter McKinnon.
Okay.
Just like the it's just good, you know. Like I was getting it like similar anyway, but then it's just good to see like where they're getting it from. That's the only reason I brought them. It's like to learn, and to see like how close I was getting it. Yeah. Like just, you know, like they're obviously, you know, you click it and then you move it to wherever you need it to be. So it's just like a baseline.
Yeah. I agree. I agree. I read an article that said, stop wasting money on presets. You know, you should never buy presets from some, I think they call them influencer photographers, you know, like Peter McKinnon or something like that, that are just flogging their presets and stuff. And I was like, look, presets aren't that expensive. If you're short on money, don't waste your money on one. Just, I don't know, go on YouTube and try and learn how to edit and make your own. But if you've got, you know, $50 to spend on a preset pack or something like that, and like you say, learn, especially if it's from a photographer that you've followed for a while, so you've seen their work. And what I've found is I've been able to take a preset, because one thing I've noticed is with most presets packs is they're very heavy-handed and they don't suit all types of, like, you couldn't put them across an entire shoot. They're very, when someone sells a preset, they want to like do something wow, but then if you put it on the wrong type of photo, it looks horrendous.
Yeah, it changes colors way too much.
I've always been like chasing this perfect preset that looks the way I want it to look, the way I'd like it to look in my head, but it works on every photo. That's my dream.
Yep.
I still haven't figured it out yet. But to try and get closer to it, I'm getting close. To maybe I'll sell my presets one day. To get closer to it, I have bought presets in the past, and then I've ended up taking bits and pieces from, you know, like maybe it's the way that they worked with like the HSL sliders or something like that.
Yeah.
And I've learned something from that, and then I've been able to tweak a different preset with that style and slowly morph into, and that's honestly the wedding preset that you'll still see on all of Jim's work and all of my work going back 5 years probably is still very close to the preset I made 5 years ago. We've probably tweaked it a couple of times slightly, but like it's and it was born from a Visco preset that again was like a film style one, but it was too heavy handed, and I basically reworked it so that it was just more universal. And we put that on the whole, we put that on the entire day, start to finish.
Yeah,
every single photo, same preset, and then we tweak, tweak from there.
Yeah, the Lightroom presets that they've got on now aren't too bad. Like they've got the, I think it's like light skin, medium skin, deep skin or dark skin. They're pretty good.
They've definitely, Lightroom have put some work into that side of it to try and have an offering, because they never used to have much that was useful. But yeah, I've been playing around with a lot. But that's the next thing on my list was Maston Labs released a new preset pack. I think it's called Founder Plus or something. And he's modified his film presets to be more universal and less aggressively film emulating. And I'm like, that's what I usually do to his stuff if I've bought it in the past. Yeah. So I'd like to see what he's done. And then the other one is, I'd love to buy something like from Peter McKinnon or from Fro or something, just to see. I just want to see what they're like.
Yeah.
See what, and do a review of it. Well, be very interesting.
I have the Peter McKinnon ones if you want them.
Well, we can't do that. It's illegal, isn't it? If you were to show me, maybe I can use them on your computer.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know what
the law is. I feel like you should get the Frono photo.
Frono, yeah, a Fropack, Fropack 9 or whatever he's up to.
Oh, he's got a bundle going at the moment.
Does he?
Yeah. Maybe
I'll have to buy it. Let me see if I can share my screen. Let me show you this 16mm lens. It's crazy.
So this is from the weekend.
This was from Monday. Nope, that's not it. That's not it. That's a messy desktop. No, it's not working.
Those screenshots of us.
Yeah, there were. For some reason, I can't get it to do its thing. Try again. There we go. So that was shot with a 16 mil, and that's with corrections on.
Yeah.
So profile corrections. But if I turn the... So I've got profile corrections enabled. I'm going to leave them enabled, but just pull the distortion down and watch how much more of the scene you can get in.
Yeah, right.
Before... Like, that's where the vignetting gets aggressive. Yeah. But, and obviously, if there were lines in this, yeah, about 28 or 30, if there were lines in it of a building or something like that, you might have to work around and it's going to have a bit of a fisheye look. But, yeah, if you compare that to, you know.
Yeah, it's like you're cropping right in, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's what takes it to like a rectilinear 16 mil. But I used it, yeah, mainly for that sort of more of a fisheye look. It was super handy. So, yeah, I'm keen to explore it a bit more. The light was pretty harsh this day, but yeah, keen to have a play with it and see what else we can get out of it. But
did you use your drone?
No, I still don't have a license to fly in the Alpine regions, unfortunately. Yep. So they have additional rules up there. And even
National Park.
No, I think it's just because it's a private Alpine thing. So they just have their own rules. I think they just obviously want to stop people from flying drones all through winter while they're running ski lifts and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I do need to get onto the drone license thing. Are you going to do yours?
Yeah, definitely. Come back from Japan and should book it in.
We'll book it in together.
Yeah.
You still enjoying the Air 2S?
Yep. I think it's an awesome drone. The only thing I would change is the fact that it doesn't do vertical.
Oh, yeah. For reels?
Reels, Instagram. Like, it doesn't really... That's probably the worst thing, because I had the first Mavic, and you could do vertical on that, and that was
Really, I thought the other than the big drones, I thought that Mini 3 Pro was the first one to do vertical.
No, it was on a weird setting though. You had to like swipe the screen while you're flying, and then choose vertical, because I've seen a couple of photographers being like, oh, I wish this would do vertical, and I'm like, no, it actually can.
Yeah,
but interesting. Air 2S though, like the other thing would be just the controller. I wish I had a designated controller, like probably what you've got.
So upgrading to the Mavic 3 Classic from the Air 2S, you can get this controller for the Air 2S, but this thing is... Oh, look.
Yeah.
It's reflecting this. It's so good. So good. Just so much faster. You don't have to plug stuff in. I love this controller.
Turn, run, and go.
Yeah. But obviously, I could have just bought that for the Air 2S. The big upgrade, other than wanting the bigger sensor and that kind of stuff, was actually... I was really keen on variable aperture because I do video and photo, and changing ND filters and stuff was a pain in the ass. And now I can basically, I might get try and get a one-stop ND filter or something just to knock down the light a tiny bit. But, even without it, I can basically shoot, video and photo in the same lighting conditions without having to land the drone and take an ND filter off, which is a game changer for what I do.
You just push the aperture a bit, and then makes it more.
I'll shoot it 2.8 for a photo, and then shoot it like if I have to f9 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it just whatever, just crank it right up to crush that light.
Yeah. So. Does that have the joysticks on it? Do you have to add them on? like, you know, what
yeah,
you
yeah, do the,
yeah,
they're stored, but I actually, when I'm, so when they're away in my case, I'll store them in the back here, but
yep.
when I'm shooting mountain biking or something like that, I'll leave them on, and I've set up my bag so that there's a spot where I can leave them on. So yep. I literally just have to turn the controller on. And I, one other trick that I learned recently is turn the controller on before we get started on a shoot. Like when I'm getting my bike set up and stuff, I'll turn the controller on and let it acquire, then the drone, and let it acquire all the satellites and stuff.
Yep.
Because the first time it does that, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
But if you're in the general area, the next time it's way faster. So yep. I do that before I actually start shooting most days.
Yeah, right. I actually don't use the actual joysticks. I don't screw them on.
What?
I feel like it's, you have more control. Try it now. Like, you have more control with your thumbs, I reckon, when you don't use the joysticks.
Nah, this controller's different. I don't know if, yours have a rounded dome
and a
screw hole.
Yeah.
I don't know if my camera will focus.
Oh, yeah. No, it's down a bit, isn't it?
It's
yeah.
like,
oh,
it's
yeah, you can
in
see that.
And it's yep. not a screw hole. It's a little like post.
Yep.
Tough to see. But yeah, yeah. it feels like you wouldn't be able to go all the way to the edges.
Yeah.
Without the thing screwed in.
Yeah. Well, there, yeah. Yeah. You can't do that then.
No, can't do that. But also, I couldn't. Yeah. I'm terrible at playing video games as it is. I need all of the help I can get. I'm flying this drone and not hitting trees. But so far, so good. I'm loving it. I'm really digging the Mavic 3. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier in the bag, but yeah, color grading's better for me.
Yep.
Stills are a little bit better. Not a game changer. Like the Air 2S was fine
yeah.
for the small clips that get put into videos, but yeah, digging it.
Actually, I have a cool drone shot idea in my head for Bendigo.
Ooh, do it.
As if it were, you know, the stock photography we're talking about.
I think you should do that.
Yeah, it would be it'd be like interesting, and it'd also be like a bit of a challenge as well to get some cool shots of Bendigo.
Yeah. Yeah, and just fill that website up with stuff. So if you've got like, you know, a free evening and the sun setting or something, you just
yeah.
pick a location, just go and shoot it. Like all the poppet heads, all that stuff. Like you just never know when someone's going to need that for advertising, or government use it for stuff. Like they all
yeah.
need stuff
yeah.
And they might want something new, and you just yeah. put a decent price on it. That's not stupid. You know, you don't make it $1,000 to license a photo.
Yeah.
I should check in case someone's actually done this before for Bendigo. I know people have done it for other towns.
Yeah.
I bet you there is one. That'd be funny.
I know there's a drone photographer in Bendigo that stock photography on his website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So he's, but mainly like for his drone stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. This is interesting. Your digital presence is about to take off. Bendigo stock photography. Yeah. It looks like someone's doing it. Wow.
Can we sell it to them then?
Who's made this though? Because they also do SEO services and website design and stuff. Yeah. Sign up today. Photos of Bendigo. Oh, it's AJ Taylor. Oh, that's cool. He's a photographer in Bendigo.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone's already doing it. You'll have to compete with him, and it looks like he's doing a great job of it. So good luck. I thought I had a unique and interesting idea, but
that's the thing though. Now it's like, if you think you've got an idea, go on to Google it.
Yeah, it actually wouldn't surprise me that you could talk to him. He probably accepts, you know, submissions off other photographers.
Yeah,
depending on what he's willing to, yeah.
Does it say how much he's selling them for,
The links to his pricing and stuff doesn't actually work, so maybe it's not as advanced as I think it is. It's got a lot of followers. 600 followers on Instagram.
Yep.
But yeah, very cool. Very cool. Doesn't mean there isn't room for more, but I didn't know anyone was doing that specifically for our hometown yet.
That's the thing, though. You're like, even when I was setting up my website for the weddings, I'm like, why would, like, there's always more room for people to do stuff.
You don't want to let the fear that someone, that there's other people doing it already stop you from trying.
That's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but you can make a calculated decision, though, too. If there's already 10 people doing it way better than you, maybe there's a different angle you can take at it rather than trying to compete with someone that's, you know, killing it or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so just finding everyone's got a different price point, different style they're after, you know, like custom. There's so many different customers that people can fill the needs of. Where you don't really have to compete, you just find something that you do well and do that. Pet photography, anything. Have you thought about pet photography?
I have. I marketed it for a little bit. I feel like Bendigo, it might be like a good spot to do it now, but when I was trying, I don't think many people were. It was before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of people message me and then I'd say the prices and they're like, oh, I don't really want to pay that much to get a photo of my cat.
Yeah.
But
you got to start cheap.
You see people down in, like, there's one in lady in Melbourne that does it.
Mm-hmm.
And she is charging megabucks and selling albums and the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you build the name and the portfolio, there's a few people doing great photos. I think, what's that other one? Ragamuffin Photography?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, that's the one? Yeah. But the photos are good, though.
Yeah.
Like, real good.
There's a lady down in Phillip Island, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was really researching that back in the day. But I feel like if you went down to a dog park and offered, like, $5, $10 for one photo, I reckon you'd sell a few on like a busy Saturday or something.
Definitely. I mean, you could try it a different angle. I mean, you've got a few different networks, friends networks, the gym that we go to, there's a lot of dogs there. Throw something out there where you more go, you know, $50 sessions.
Yep.
But, you know, at a sort of a similar location or whatever on the same day, and just try and cram them in. Because you can probably get plenty done in 20 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
With a dog and a couple of people or whatever. And just do that to get, you know, just try and get six people that'll pay $50. Then you've got a portfolio. And then, you know what would actually maybe give you a bit of an advantage? Let people take their dogs with you on a little bit of an adventure and mix the landscape photography into it too. You know, so you're putting them in a beautiful landscape spot. So you're getting the close ups first, and then as the sun sets or something, you get this amazing landscape photo with them and their dog out at some cool location. And that's something you could charge a lot of money for.
Yeah.
If you became known for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be like destination weddings, but instead of it'd be destination pet photography.
Yeah, like an adventure elopement but with your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would pay money for that.
I think people would pay money for that. I think you might have just found your niche.
Yeah, that would be a cool niche. But they always say you don't work with kids or dogs or animals.
Someone's got to.
Yeah.
Someone's got to. I don't know. You got nothing to lose too because, worst case, you try it for a little while, you do a few and you go, that didn't work. That's, you know, it's too hard or something. But, I have a cool shot that I took with... you know, I did it myself, but that I took with Ted, I love it. Let me bring up my screen. And it's a landscape, nightscape kind of thing. Share screen.
Is that in the middle of the road?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm... Yeah.
The Instagram that I never update. Where is it? There's the pooch. Yeah, this one. You know?
Yeah.
Like...
That is cool.
Yeah, doing stuff like that. Love it. People would love to have something like that, or epic sunset up on the ridge of a mountain or whatever with their dog. Yeah. And you've got a drone as well. Like, yeah, you could do very cool stuff. And then obviously mix that in with, you know, the close-up dog shots that people want,
yeah,
you know, to go along with it.
Well, at the time I was living with my partner's, like, we were living at her mum's house because we were saving for a house. Mm-hmm. And I actually booked out a day and I brought like a backdrop, a few lights.
Oh, yeah.
And we brought in, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 dogs for the day.
Yeah.
And done like actual like studio shoot.
Yep.
Which I didn't really like much. And it was very hard. It was a lot of hard work trying to get the dog to stay still where you wanted them to be without their owner.
They're the shots that are really difficult, and I think you just steer away from that and steer into more the shots with them interacting with their owner somewhere fun, and you use whatever lenses, so you know, you use a bit of a longer lens so you can capture them as they're moving around and stuff like that, where you go wide and getting close. But work with the situation instead of I've had to do the same kind of thing and trying to get a dog to sit and stay and using flash and in a studio setting, it's tricky. The people that do that are they're good at what they do, but they're often, you know, pet experts more than they are photographers.
Yeah. Because I've been out, like, obviously our dog has an Instagram that's, while she was a puppy, we'll get some really cool photos of. We'll obviously let that go a little bit. But even my sister, she's had a couple of dogs and we've gone out on a few good walks with her and got some pretty cool photos. So it's definitely a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's something to think about for your 2023 buy a new mirrorless camera business.
Adventure.
Adventure. How much money do you need to buy it? Like how much money you got to make from photography so you can afford, what camera are you getting? Don't know.
R5.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been looking into the Sony's and I just can't change my mind past the R5.
It's a great camera. Great webcam. I'm telling you. Look at it.
Great webcam. Look how crisp you are.
Look how crisp I am.
It's also the fact if I want to do more action sports as well. So snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Even I've got a few mates who do motocross.
Yep.
The R5, it's not that quick.
A7 R5.
But the Sony version, it doesn't shoot that quick.
Yeah, it's a bit slow. The Canon did a good job to make all of the, like the R6 Mark II, the R5, and obviously the R3, but they're all fast, like real fast.
The R6 Even, II is quick.
40 frames a second.
That is, if that didn't have, there's a 24 megapixel.
Yeah.
It shoots. Yeah. If it wasn't that, I'd probably get that.
That's what I shoot with. R3 is 24 megapixel. I don't know. I've printed a lot of photos and obviously the extra resolution is delightful when you have it, but it's certainly not needed. Autofocus from the R3 was just a game changer. You know, a sharp 24 megapixel photo for me is worth way more than a missed 45 megapixel photo, you know, so. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But for you, the R5 is probably better all around. It's still fast. Like it's still, you know.
It does both.
The electronic shutter is not great for action sports, so I would really only rely on 12 frames a second. But 12 frames a second is still that just a few years ago was what the best body you could buy. Like the 1DX Mark 1 or 2 was still in that 12 frames a second range. You know, like it's insane.
I think we're just spoiled now.
We are spoiled now. Crazy spoiled for cameras.
Yeah. And I don't think I could ever shoot like holding a camera like that. Like I'm always going to be.
To your eye. Yeah. You'd be surprised if you start doing video stuff. You shoot video with it out a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And then you start doing photos that way a little bit sometimes too. I do both now. It's weird. I don't know. I thought I would never, but I still catch myself taking photos off the back screen sometimes. Sometimes it's just better for interacting with people. Sometimes way better.
Yeah.
Depends
on the situation, I guess.
Never say never.
Yeah. But I do guess on a landscape photo shoot, I will have it on a tripod and I'll be off the back screen.
Back screen. Yep.
Yeah.
So.
But when I'm shooting weddings, I'll never shoot off a back screen.
Never say never.
With the camera I have now.
Oh, no. No, definitely not. Definitely not with the old DSLRs. Okay. I think we've done a pretty good job of talking about all the ways that you can make money. Not all the ways, but the ways that most people that are sort of trying to build a bit of a side hustle can make money with their camera. Have you ever sold prints?
I've sold a few.
Yeah.
Not as many as I'd like. I don't really market myself as well as I could.
It's one that's kind of like, it's like a mixture of, it's different. It's like a mixture of presets and stock photography, but in a different way. It's like, if you had a good following, obviously you're not selling prints, generally you're not selling prints to other photographers, but if you have a following of non-photographers, you're going to have a better chance at selling your prints. And then, it's, I don't know, obviously you need great work as well. It's doable. It's another tough one though.
I'm going to go to a market, I think, this year. Maybe just get a few printed out and just, have a certain amount and just see how they go.
Yeah. People just, it needs to suit their house and their style and stuff like that. People don't care as much about who made it anymore. They're more, unless you have that following and you can tell a story about you as the artist and things, but at a market or something, often people are just looking and thinking, oh yeah, that'll suit. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
But
and I feel like if it's in their face too, they're more likely going to be like, I want that. Instead of, it's like, when you go to the shop and you see something, you're like, oh, I really want that. But if you're on a website, you'd be like, oh no, you know what? I'll get it next week. And then you just forget about it.
Yeah. Whereas I tell you what they will definitely buy a big print of, and that's them and their dog sitting on the ridge at sunset. That's a much nicer print to have in someone's house than some generic sunset photo of a place. That's what I'd be leaning into. One of the notes I had down here was, to make money with your camera, you just have to create value for people. So you got to find where you can create value for people and lean into that as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And, are you creating a lot of value at a market with photos and compared to doing something that's special and unique for a client, whether it's helping them grow their business or, creating memories of their pet or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value to create there. That's my opinion.
Yeah, because, having a photo of, say, I've got a few photos of Robe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I've never been there, so why would I want a photo of that?
Yes.
Where? Yeah. And then if they're getting a print done of that trip that we done with them and their pet, it brings back the memory. So every time they see that, they'll remember, like, how they're feeling.
Exactly.
The whole trip. Yeah. Same. Yeah. Same for any shoot, I guess.
That's exactly it. We should probably wrap this thing up. Let me see what other notes I had here. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Not on that making money sort of genre.
Well, we'll...
I think we're pretty good.
Save it for the next episode if there's some other things.
Save it for Jim. But,
yeah, when Jim's back. If anyone made it this far in the podcast, leave a comment. Tell us what you thought. What he wants to talk about on the next episode. And thank you.
Yeah.
Episode 2 in the books.
Done. Live.
Done. I'll talk to you next week.
No worries. See you later. Have a good night.